KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Goodbye.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development and Events Committee meeting will be held on Monday, February 9th at 5 p.m. The meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah. All of the witches and the demons better get out my way.
Well, good evening, and amidst all of the goings on in our country and the world right now, this is, what a week. My name is Jean Bryant. I have been historically one of the co-hosts of Transpositive PDX, co-producers, and my pronouns are she, her.
And my name is Emma, and I've also been one of the people who's helped produce the show over the years. My pronouns are also she, her.
My name is Sheila, and I'm just one of the unwashed masses, and I also go by she, her.
Great. So we're going to talk about some new stuff tonight. I'd love it if we started with the Kansas state bills, Senate Bill 244 and House Bill 2426.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so make me get it, you know, like on the record right away. Okay, gotcha.
It's the most egregious thing.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is, Emma. And here's the deal, you guys listening. This hit, just like right before production here, right before our conversation. So please forgive me if I'm not entirely articulate on, you know, its nature. But I will suggest that if you are curious, the source that I used to get pointed to this issue was Erin Reed and her podcast and her online stuff. I did take the time to go and look and hit the links and read, you know, some of the text. I'm not an attorney, and I'll tell you that I contacted Sheila earlier before we started recording and asked her, because she has more legal training than I, but I think the assumptions that are projected in some of the stuff that Erin points to are as legitimate as I can assess. So here are the overall basics that these two bills, you know, one's a House bill, one's a Senate bill, in the state of Kansas. And the other I want to pre-pose, the significance of this is that we've seen this trend over multiple years. Things get introduced in various senates and legislatures in various states, which then produce lawsuits, which then get elevated to the United States Supreme Court, which then, you know, validate these the premises, and this, you know, methodology is so obvious. And here's the, that's what makes this Kansas thing so scary, is that it is like going completely for our jugular, and it's going to produce stuff that's going to go straight to this Supreme Court. It's scary. Okay, this is why. Okay, so we're talking about Kansas. Go look it up yourselves. Please don't just take my word for it. Kansas Senate Bill 244 and Kansas House Bill 2426. You can get the full script of it. It's way more than I'm going to get here, though I've already been rambling. In a nutshell, what this proposed legislation, which seems to be staged to pass both houses there and go to the governor for signature, does it several things. Number one, it expands the concept of excluding trans or, you know, gender nonconforming people from use of sex segregated facilities, bathrooms, you know, locker rooms, you know, changing rooms, those kinds of places. It expands that from government owned facilities, which has been kind of a barrier, the safe zone that they've limited things to in the past, to privately owned businesses, any kind of sex segregated, you know, facility, you know, in any circumstance, be it government owned, privately owned, doesn't matter. Okay, that's a major shift. And then it goes on to say that it allows any person to bring a civil action against any other person based on an allegation of use of facilities not consistent with their sex at birth. And it goes on specifically yet to state that doesn't matter what your government issued documents for your identity may state. It goes on yet to say that you must produce those documents. They have to be verified. And if they are not consistent with your sex at birth, then you, as the, you know, person who possesses those documents, are subject to not only being, you know, there and then guilty of, you know, the civil suit, which is a lot of money and a lot of, you know, legal fees and a lot of stuff impacts on you as an individual. You then are also, you know, criminally, you have to, you know, your documents are no longer valid, and that's and that is retroactive all the way back to when you got them in that state. Or, well, I don't know. It doesn't even limit it to the state of Kansas. I mean, okay, so I'm just going to shut up now because I've been rambling for a while, but listen to the scope of what I'm saying here. This opens up what Aaron Reed, I think, arguably, legitimately, may be a little overstated, but it's like, this allows any person, not law enforcement, not the owner of the business, any person. This is what she says. This is, oh my gosh, what's the wording?
Can I add something here,
oh,
Jean?
Oh, go ahead, yeah.
Okay, sure, so.
Okay, you guys get it. I'm sure you get it.
Yeah. So this bill, I mean, first of all, the legislation has a pretty high probability of making it all the way into the law books in Kansas, because as you pointed out in a previous email that I think Gene and are that we got,
yes,
that right now, and I did some research on this before the show too, that Kansas has a veto proof majority.
Yes.
Now, and so even though the governor has said that she is going to veto this bill if it comes before her, it's pretty likely that the state of Kansas will probably bring it back and override the governor's veto.
Yes.
But if they do, it will immediately face multiple legal challenges from the ACLU, because there are provisions in the bill that are definitely unconstitutional. They violate 14th Amendment protections. And so, you know, I think the bill will immediately be contested, but it certainly is going to make things more difficult for Kansans to use the bathroom. There's some things about the bill that, like you said, are particularly pernicious. I mean, the first thing that I think is a little bit new, well, it's not completely new about the bill, but it's one of those bills that, like, you can actually go to jail for using the bathroom. So on the first time you use the bathroom, if you go to the bathroom the first time,
$25,000. And the second time, if it's $125,000.
Well, yeah, no. So for you as an individual,
yeah,
the first violation is a written warning. The second violation is a $1,000 fine, and then the third and fourth violations are both potential misdemeanors. So
that's a criminal.
That's where you could be cited for a misdemeanor for using the bathroom. In addition to that, the institution who owns the bathroom could be fined $25,000
yes.
for allowing you to use the bathroom. And so they hope that that's a way that it will force institutions
yes.
to police your gender. So it's a really awful bill. I mean, it's really terrible. And
oh, it's the most egregious thing I've ever seen. And Emma, all due respect, you know, I appreciate your point about, yeah, of course this is going to be challenged immediately, but all you're saying, it reinforces what I said earlier in my comments about it will precipitate a rapid advance to the United States Supreme Court. And with this court, it's scary. This is incredibly scary. This is not limited to living in Lawrence, Kansas, by any stretch.
So the let's
constitutional
hear what you
questions
have to say.
Are going to be elevated rapidly. And that's my point.
Yeah. So let's hear what Sheila has to say. Sheila, do you have any comments on this particular news item?
Yes, I'd like to unpack this whole bathroom situation kind of once and for all. I told a friend today that the only way that I'm likely to ever go to Kansas is if I'm walking Toto somewhere and I get sucked up by a tornado and dropped over the state of Kansas. So it's not going to affect me personally. But I would like to say that one of the things in an article that's already come out is that recently a member of the House, I believe, of the Kansas State Legislature was a transgender woman who was appointed to fill a vacancy, and many of the members objected to this. So in some ways, this is a targeted bill, much as some of the things that we see happening around the United States, including in the state of Montana. So this is basically a we do not want to serve with you vote. So in some respects, it's symbolic. But we have to remember that these bathroom bills come up on a regular basis. And there was one in North Carolina so many years ago that brought on a massive boycott of the entire state and ended up costing the state millions of dollars just to have this on their books. But let's try to figure what this would actually mean. First of all, it's based upon the assumption that transgender people move in only one direction. And the fact of the matter is the odds right now are that half of the transgender population is female to male transgender people, in which case many of them grow full facial hair, sometimes lose a lot of hair on the top of their heads, look very male, and they are basically insisting that these presenting male people will now be mandated according to their law to flood into the women's rooms, much to the distress and chagrin that they're trying to prevent. So let's go a little deeper into this whole sexual anxiety thing. There are several things that always come out. One, transgender people are inherently medically unstable and are mentally ill. Answer to that question is the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, makes it very clear that the only abnormality that goes with the transgender condition per se is the anxiety and pain of gender dysphoria, which is the inability to live within the gender to which we feel we belong or should have a right to express. The second thing is that the fear that somehow or other the American family is going to be torn down by the existence of people that exist in an in-between status. And these things crop up once in a while along the lines of the transgender panic defense when people attack us and is used as a defense to say that we were not assaulted. They were being defrauded in some way. Some of this is a legacy from the old days in New York City before Stonewall, where people were so told they have to wear three items of indicative clothing, gender associated, to prove that they are not having sex under some sort of fraudulent purpose. And so they would arrest you if you didn't have three items of male clothing. Well, in today's kind of unisex and very informal world, the idea that we can genderize clothing is becoming increasingly difficult to say exactly which side of the, dividing line we're going to start gendering clothing. Now, so we come to this question, which is, why are bathrooms such important spaces for us? If you're actually in a woman's room, the first thing that any woman would tell you is that there's a degree of privacy in women's rooms that you do not find in male restrooms. You don't have stalls that are open to the entire world. Each one is a private cubicle in which it is, unless someone is trying to be obnoxious, there's no way that anybody is going to know what you are doing. So number one, the odds that you're going to forfeit your privacy is really a misnomer. The second is that you're more likely to be a victim of sexual assault. Well, most of the women's rooms in America are frequented by multiple women at one time. The idea that someone is amongst all of her sisters, all of whom are with cell phones that could call for aid, that this is where she's likely to be raped by someone who walked in pretending to be transgender, the odds against that are so high that the mere conception is absurd. Next, transgender people have not been guilty of sexual assaults in all the statistics around the country. We don't find that happening. Where we do find sexual assaults happening are amongst members of Congress and things, where people are constantly coming up against accusations of sexual harassment. So if they really want to protect women, perhaps the best thing is to have some education upon about patriarchy and about the dangers that you may encounter merely by fact of serving as an aide in a congressional setting. So anyway, so the bottom line here is that this is a manifestation of anxiety. It's an effort to curry votes on what I would call a cheap shot. It's basically a way of kind of marshaling some gut level anxiety amongst the voter populace and basically coming across as some sort of a protector of womanhood and apple pie. And it's something that is drawn out of another era. It's not workable. It's going to cause massive embarrassment if people start being carded outside of every restroom that they go to all day long. What it will do is we'll have certain people like Mrs. Kravitz on the old Bewitched show that never stopped looking out of her window to see if Samantha was a witch. It will cause people that like to be in other people's business to be scoping each other out in a way that's highly intrusive. And there's bound to be a lot of false positives identified there that are going to be massively embarrassing and perhaps even open up businesses to lawsuits for people that have been misidentified as being transgender and now are so insulted that they're suing the business owner. They haven't considered that. So those are my initial comments tonight.
Due respect, my friend, Sheila Esquire, due respect. I don't contest your points. However, I do point to that your points aren't new. This is the basic approach that has been, you know, utilized now for quite a while. And while I appreciate, you know, like stay the course concepts, we are continuing to have an erosion of our situation based on maintaining, you know, that, you know, it's like, you got to be kidding me. This is morally, you know, wrong. This is hype, you know, it's hypocritical, all of which is true, but you know, we're losing the battle maintaining those as foundational points. I'm not saying to give them up. I'm saying we got to find something else now to add into the battle, because you know, they're bowling us over. And the other point is that in your comments, you did seem to limit the impacts to the state of Kansas. And honey, you gotta understand, and I know you do, that the overall strategic approach by the interests that are advancing this legislation are to immediately, as quickly as they can possibly get it there through the appeals process, to the SCOTUS, okay? The Supreme Court of the United States of America, and, you know, regarding these constitutional questions. And I gotta give them this, you know, they've dialed into a place where, you know, they're most likely to get this completely executed. And anyway, you know,
so I've got a couple of questions for you, Gene, and for you.
Sure.
Okay, so I've got two questions. Question number one is this any worse than it was for us 25 years ago when we didn't have any rights? And question number two, if they're going for a Supreme Court case, what's their end goal?
Well, the end goal is to say that states have the right to have laws like this. Okay? I mean, basically, okay, that it is not an inherent constitutional right of an American citizen or anybody legally in this country to the benefits of the constitutional amendments that protect us based on sex and gender and the interpretations that have grown over the the last 60 years of precedential constitutional interpretation.
So basically to overturn Obergefell.
Oh yes, more or less. Yes, more or less. And we've already seen the erosions regarding minor, trans folks, regarding, healthcare and stuff like that. Folks who are, less than 18 or whatever the age of majority is, and still subject to parental, governance. But, they're coming for it doesn't matter. And so it's a devolution of so many of the things that we have come to, those of us that are still, living, have come to assume were like inherent rights. And they're coming at this from some interesting legal angles. And they are interesting, fascinating, and legitimate, arguably legitimate legal angles. They're angles that legitimately get them in the courtroom and legitimately force judges.
What do you find legitimate?
To ask the questions and answer the questions.
Dean, what do you find legitimate in their arguments?
Oh my God. Oh, please, you're going to do this to me, as we're broadcasting?
And it's the way you argue their case for them. Let's try to imagine
anybody who has to argue, verbal arguments in front of the Supreme Court gets, time to prepare. Give me a break.
Well, let's go to Sheila and have Sheila address those questions.
Jeez.
What do you think, Sheila?
God, Sheila, were my friend.
Well, you seem to be arguing the other side for a second, and what I wanted to imply is there is simply no legitimate public policy that is favored by targeting transgender people. Now, if they did want to have it look as though it's not discriminatory in any way, they would simply say that they would probably try to phrase it in such a way that to ensure public peace, it's important that people stick to one gender presentation rather than another. In other words, how you look is how you should go into the bathroom. In other words, it causes the least amount of scandal, the least amount of danger to the public, that anybody's going to be offended. We're going to make it as smooth as possible. That might possibly get by a rational basis test.
Yeah, but that's not what this Kansas stuff says.
Yeah, but it basically, that's not what they say, because as I just pointed out, the trans male population will suddenly have to go into the female restrooms, and it's going to cause any number of problems. They simply have not considered that. They're looking at it from only one point of view. They're thinking that, first of all, they don't understand that transgender people are very, very passable. This idea that we're simply men in dresses is simply not true. They're some of the most attractive people are actually modeling on the international stage for things like Victoria's Secret and things like this. This is that's the quality of stuff that's coming out the door nowadays. Transgender people are very believable.
Thank you for the compliment.
That's true. And here's the bottom line is that there already is some legislation at the federal level, at the Supreme Court level, on the books that says that the 1964 Civil Rights Act includes intentional discrimination on the basis of sex, and transgender status is considered sex. Now, unless they want to overrule that decision, it's not going to be work very well if they say that only transgender people do not belong in that bathroom, because if they don't show a birth certificate or some other identifier, and just think of the problem of enforcing a thing like that. Are people going to stand outside? Think how many restrooms there are all around America. People don't have time to be checking each other out. It's just going to be so costly and expensive. And like I say, what about the danger of false positives? What about heterosexual people that are wearing a grubby sweatshirt one day and suddenly get clocked as a male because they have short hair? What about the lesbian population? What's going to happen to them?
Councilor, you know? Earlier in my comments, I acknowledged that you were, recognizing arguments that have been in place for a long time. And, and my whole point in addressing that was that, oh my goodness, this is, and this is, this adds significance. Don't diss this effort on their parts. This is, they obviously feel that they have an avenue. They have an argument. They have an argument that they can get all the way to the Supreme Court for a disadvantageous decision on, for us. Okay.
Let's be real clear. What is that argument? Let's pretend you were the attorney advocating their cause. What would you consider a valid argument to make before the Supreme Court to say this serves a rational basis? What harm are we trying to prevent?
Oh my goodness.
I mean, they would say the tropes that we would always expect them to say. They would say they're trying to protect women from sexual assault. That would be their number one.
Where is the data that is likely to occur? In other words, right. Isn't that a massive overreach? Mm-hmm.
They've already overruled any of those statistical, things in earlier SCOTUS decisions.
I don't think so. We usually win when it goes to the federal courts. We win. The bottom line is this: this is an embarrassment to them, not to us. And what I would like us to do as a community is, I'd like us to have enough confidence in ourselves that we can say, we are here. We're not going anywhere. It is a medical condition. This is a temporary upwelling of social anxiety that takes so many different forms: fear of immigrants, fear of Muslims, fear of transgender people. We are included in a massive number of people that are causing panic amongst a certain segment of the American population. But I maintain that anxiety is so inappropriate, and the means that they've chosen is so brutal, as being shown every day in Minnesota, that actually is going to work against them in the long haul.
Due respect, counselor, you continue to divert your counter arguments to my points into some form of a moral question, when my whole point is that this is a strategic, very fine pointed, legal. This is not moral. This is not right or wrong. This is how law functions in the United States of America. Question.
So we're talking tonight with, this is, you're listening to Trans Positive here on KBO Community
Thanks,
Radio.
Yeah.
And tonight we're talking with Jean, our pessimist, and Sheila, our optimist, about bathroom bills and what's the ultimate strategy.
Wow. And it's like, I'm at a disadvantage because I only kind of am a paralegal and I'm debating with an actual attorney. So,
I just want to clarify, nothing here constitutes any kind of legal advice or legal opinion. We are simply three individuals who are talking about bathroom bills and how they may affect transgender people.
Yeah.
what I kind of like is anecdotal things from our own experiences. I mean, everyone in talking tonight is a fairly long-term trans person and have seen all the different anomalies through the years. And I can tell you from personal experience that I do not like public restrooms. I avoid them whenever I possibly can. And that's as much for hygiene as for other reasons. So I don't consider them places of recreation. I don't expect them to be the place where you know, there was a, I forget the thing, there was a, oh, Lawrence of Arabia, the movie, when he goes into the town of Dera, he says to his friend, he says, what are you looking for? He says, I'm looking for somewhere to announce myself. Well, believe me, transgender people do not want to use restrooms as their place of for a big coming out party. This is not what transgender people want. But the assumption is for people that do not know any transgender people who have no empathy for our condition or how difficult it is for us sometimes to even be in any public setting, especially in early transition, why in the world do they think that we want to make a fuss amongst people that are going to look at us with these horrible, suspicious eyes? That's exactly the last thing any one of us would ever do. So it's based upon and some sort of a gut level and innate fear. And like all prejudice, whether it was the old prejudice of the 60s against black people, the idea there presumably was that in some way black people could not drink out of a white water fountain. Why? Was there some black genetic thing that was going to be passed on or some disease or something? Answer, no. It was simply the idea that we keep things separate and then everything works better. In other words, people are allowed to remain just as stupid and ignorant as they have always been. So what I'm thinking here is that we have to, when we see people doing really stupid things and using the legal institutions of our country to make their prejudice real, they betray themselves in that very action. And that is the one thing that will actually help our community in the long run, because people don't like being around bigoted, stupid people. Sooner or later, it comes bristling out, and it really actually in some ways helps us. That's my one optimistic point here, is that I think just like once we finally aired how bad the segregation was in the South, that's when things got to improving. Well, this is how we're going to turn the corner on this thing and finally be accepted at a level that we never have before. We'll solve this problem. For one thing, a lot of places are putting in gender-neutral bathrooms, which is the most sensible thing of all.
Counselor, due respect again, your point about that you know we're going to eventually win on some sort of a logical, moral, you know, basis is legitimate. Okay, it's great, and I agree with you on that point. In the meantime, what we're facing here with the whole basis of this discussion with the Kansas bills and such, and the potentialities of expanding these principles that are, you know, in that Kansas bill to some sort of a national level that allow, you know, civil legal challenges with, you know, penalties and you know the whole idea that ultimately the concept will be you know decided to be like, you know, extraneous or illegitimate is not going to help the individual people, trans people who are going to be charged and drug into litigation, multiple thousands of dollars, you know, with, you know, fines and all kinds of other things while this whole thing gets played out. Okay? It's I'll grant you the moral high ground, but it's like, come on, let's get down in the trenches here.
I don't think we're that dumb. I think that if we recognize that,
who am we?
Let's say that I was a transgender person, and the word would get out amongst our community. If suddenly people are being charged left and right, people would, unfortunately, they would be forced to use the bathroom that does not correspond with their gender. That is true. They would have to make that sacrifice or run the risk of the litigation and hope to be. And hope that it will be found unconstitutional. Living in Kansas right now, I would not be a happy camper. Ooh. But I'm just saying that this thing is going to fail in the long haul. In the short haul, accommodations will have to be made.
Right. I'd like to talk for a minute, Jean. So, you know, I think that part of what Sheila's addressing here, which is really insightful, is, I mean, she is kind of getting at the spirit of the law, the spirit of the Constitution. I mean, there's a way in which you argue legally in order to advocate for an advancement of rights. And this is a very slow process. It's very slow. It's very methodical. And it takes a long time. I mean, these very people that you're talking about, Jane, who are going to be harmed, are the people who are going to be the basis of the lawsuits that will eventually create fundamental civil protections for all transgender people. It may not happen, you know, tomorrow. It might take a generation or two generations, but this is how eventually what we're going to do is we're going to get to a point where we're considered a protected class. And I don't know if you noticed, but in the arguments that happened around the case that was argued last year,
Scamati.
Scrimeti. One of the main points that I think it was just Justice Conan Barrett, but also I think Justice it wasn't Roberts, but anyways, one of the other justices, but mainly Conan Barrett, made the argument that, you know, transgender people don't have a record as a protected class. And that's true. I mean, we're not considered a protected class because
not
we don't
specifically
have
that's true.
Yeah,
that's
we don't
true.
Have a history of being discriminated against because until recently we didn't exist legally. And now that we exist legally, we're being discriminated against. And the fact that we're being discriminated against is going to be the basis of our protected class status eventually.
Yeah, the basic, if I may venture this as best as I can, our situation is an extrapolation. It is a continuation and extrapolation of decisions that were made based on feminist, primarily feminist. It's primarily feminist-based arguments regarding gender, not just sex, the whole evolution of the extension of wording in the law from sex to gender was very much feminist based, arguments.
That is correct.
Thank you. Yeah, it is correct. And the thing is that now it's like, this is backing up. It's like, that was kind of a broad brush. Now we're going to subdivide it,
Right.
Yeah, so that people need to understand that. And that's really where we're at. So you can't go back and say, well, the law says, and these decisions say, no, now we're into a subdividing question.
But that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it means that we've inserted ourselves enough into the public sphere that now there's all of this argument over, what are we exactly? I mean, what are we? What kind of a human are we according to the Constitution? And there's some people who are like, oh no, there's no way transgender people exist. The only thing that exists is biological essentialism. And then there's all of this pushback against it. And so we're in the public record. And over time, This is how we'll establish our rights. I mean, we started off by asserting the rights to the maximum advantage that we could assert them as transgender people, you know, basically saying, hey, just leave us alone and give us our rights.
At the time.
You know, but the mainstream society has to respond with whatever. I mean, maybe this is just part of educating them. Maybe in 100 years, nobody will think anything about this. Who knows?
well, I would like to give you two brief anecdotes, which I invite both of you to give me something similar, because maybe this is an example that can be used. I can think of two instances, both of which times I was presenting as I usually do as female. And once was at Seattle Center, right during either the Folklife Festival or the Bumbershoot Festival. And I had to use the restroom. And this was on a day when the restrooms were crowded, crowded, crowded. And I had no choice. And I just said, okay, I've got to decide one way or the other. So here's the moment. So I went, and this was an early transition. So I went in the female restroom, went in, waited in line like everybody else, went in, used the restroom. And while I was in there, I heard some male voice from outside saying, is everyone okay in there? With his real suspicious voice. And everyone said, yes, we're doing just fine. And so when I left, I walked up to the mirror, fluffed my hair out, smiled at the ladies that were still waiting in line and said, thank you. And that was a great moment because I was proud of my sisters for standing by me. And I was proud that I had acknowledged that I was, in a sense, a guest. I was someone allowed into their company by their choice. So that was one story I wanted to share. The other was on a Halloween at a big, big casino. Again, I was a female. And this particular night, I said, I just don't want to deal with it. I'm just going to use the boys' room. So I went into the boys' room, and I was standing in the mirror, fluffing my hair and doing my makeup. And one of the guys said, this is fantastic. I wish every night was well like this. So I enjoyed that, too.
Yeah. I don't, and again, my dear friend, you know, these culturally based anecdotal, you know, observations are wonderful. And I agree that I think, you know, when it comes to cultural evolutions, left without, you know, major legal, you know, constraints, we're on the winning side. I completely agree. But, you know, the thing is that we're being accosted, we're being attacked on a flank that, you know, we don't, we're being really challenged, and we need to address that. We need to address it, you know, on that flank of our perimeter, whatever, you know, military.
What's our best way to challenge that? What would be the best way we could challenge that?
Well, sometimes, you know, in my lived experience, seeing as we are not a privileged or necessarily powerful, you know, interest, even within our coalition of LGBTIQ, okay? We need to adopt a very strategic approach. And sometimes it is to be passive as opposed to aggressive. And that's, you know, we could have an entirely, you know, dominated, you know, show based on that philosophy alone.
No, we should. Let's think about this for the next show, because this is a great topic. I mean, you're asking a good question, Sheila, and that's how should we deal with this? And Gina's saying sometimes we need to be passive. And we need to be strategic. And those are both great answers. I mean, but that's like the kernel of a much bigger conversation. I think that we should come back together at some point in the future and have a really detailed conversation about this. Maybe we could invite Jasmine on from the Oregon State Bar. We've had her on before.
I would love that,
Yeah,
Kevin.
and
That would be
see like
great.
what's what I mean, what how do we do this? But briefly, in the 5 minutes that we have left, like, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think something that a lot of times gets underplayed is that transgender people have great diversity. We're not a monoclonal group of people. Some of us are much more flamboyant than others. I happen to come out in the drag queen crowd of the 1980s and 90s. And those were my mentors, those were my people, and those are still kind of my people. So my idea of hiding my face under a bushel basket is not going to happen. It just wasn't the kind of person that I wanted to be. Also, I had a tremendous respect for the ACT UP movement at the time of the AIDS epidemic. So part of me, I have to confess my own bias, is to be confrontive but not obnoxious. You're obnoxious when you really just try to be abrasive. You're assertive when you assert your rights, but in any other way, you try to be as everyday as possible. Others of us have found it more effective to go stealth and to just kind of blend into the atmosphere and just live our lives. And that's ultimately the goal of everybody. It's just that we come at it from different angles. I came at it from early transition, in your face, makeup, and fluffy hair, and every day is a pageant. That was me. Others of us maybe said, just want to be accepted in suburbia. They're both valid ways of being in this world, but they're both equally transgender because they're just who we are and how we are. And I like to assume that people will be kind if you're given an opportunity to be kind. And I'm often surprised at how nice people can be.
Well, this is really great. We've only got a couple of minutes left for the show, but Jean, do you have any closing thoughts?
Oh, well, as far as really setting out, the parameters of the playing field, I don't disagree with a thing that my dear friend, has just said. It's not a question. It's not a question of the question. The question is, what's the answer? Okay. And the question answer is really only really important in the immediate context, the immediate situation that you're answering it, and that's why we can't seem to come to a really solid, like, this and that and this and that and and here's the little catch that I'm going to try and get in with enough time, is, it's a binary. This is not a binary question. It's not an if then. It's not a yes no. It's a somewhere in between. And we're non-binary people, and we have to acknowledge that. We have multiple questions and we have multiple answers. It's not this or that. None of anything in our own debates is this or that.
Thanks. So I'd like to share just a few thoughts about this, especially for our transgender Kansans. I mean, I've been to Kansas lots of times. I'm from the Midwest, and Kansas is a really beautiful state. It's mostly a lot of empty space. It's a lot of cornfields and prairie and cows, and it's pretty empty, but it's a beautiful state too. It's really beautiful. I mean, I'm sorry that this is what transgender Kansans are having to deal with, but I just want to say that, this doesn't mean that you as a transgender person need to disappear, and it doesn't mean that everybody's against you, and it doesn't mean that harm is inevitable. But it does mean that it's going to make your life feel more like it's being surveilled, and it does create possible situations for harassment. You are transgender, and your body is not a legal abstraction. It's yours, and no law can make a stranger entitled to your medical history. And even hostile laws do not instantly rewrite social reality. And just because there's been a hostile law created, even by a state legislature, that doesn't mean that it's legal. That doesn't mean that it's constitutional. That doesn't mean that it's moral or that it's right. There have been plenty of laws in American history that were passed by acts of state legislatures, even by acts of Congress, that were completely unethical, completely immoral, eventually overturned, but not before they caused a lot of damage. So know who you are. There's a lot of places where you can go for support, and know who your allies are. If you need to get out, then leave. If you have to stay, then do the best that you can to survive. Remember, survival is always the highest priority. And thrive too, because we're here for you. We're your transgender allies, and we're here with you. And if you need our support, we're here. You can reach out to us, and you can reach out to any of your friends in the trans community. So,
Amen and hallelujah.
yeah, you've been listening to Trans Positive here on KBOO Community Radio, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with more discussion. Jean, Sheila, thanks so much for joining
Yeah,
me.
that one.
Hi, T. Thank you for joining us on Trans Positive today. As we wrap up, we want to take a moment to celebrate and affirm the experiences of transgender, non-binary, and gender non-conforming people everywhere. Your identities, your voices, and your stories matter. You are valid, you are seen, and you are loved. Living authentically can sometimes be challenging, and the world doesn't always make it easy to claim the space you deserve. But every time you express your truth, every time you honor who you are making a powerful statement, not just to yourself, but to the people around you. You are contributing to a world that is more inclusive, more compassionate, and more aware of the beauty and diversity. Remember, there are spaces and communities, like this one, where you can be yourself without fear or judgment. Spaces where your creativity, your resilience, and your courage are recognized and celebrated. Your life, your voice, and your journey are significant. You have something important to offer, something unique that no one else can give. We encourage you to continue exploring, connecting, and supporting one another. Seek out friends, mentors, and local resources that affirm you, and know that it's okay to ask for help when you need it. Affirmation isn't just about external validation. It's about recognizing your own worth, honoring your experience, and allowing yourself to flourish.so, take pride in who you are. Stand in your truth. Celebrate your victories, your challenges, and your ongoing growth. Know that your presence in this world matters, that your story is powerful, and that you are never alone.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
It's the month of love, so let's celebrate the love of the blues and the legend Willie Mae Thornton, a.k.a. Big Mama Thornton. Tune in Friday, February 13th at 8 p.m. with me,